on down the road and stopping Fannie Mae. Gonna tell her Fannie what I heard. A boyfriend said, don't start me talking. I'll tell her everything I know. I'm gonna break up this signifying, 'cause somebody's got to go. Jack give his wife $2, go downtown and get some margin. Gets out on the street. Old George stopped her. He knocked her down and black in the eye. She gets back home. Tell her husband a lie. Don't start me talking. I'll tell everything I know. I'm gonna break up this thing and find somebody's got to go. Borrow some money, go to the beauty shop, to hump his horn. She began to stop, said, take me, baby, around the block. I'm going to the beauty shop where I can get my hair side. Don't stop me talking, I'll tell everything I know.
AM K108 on this Sunday morning, 9 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock, and it's time now for the Carol Cox Show on KWAI K108. Today, Carol has a guest that is going to be calling in from Somersville, South Carolina. Her name is Shirley McGrill, and she's from the International Primate Protection League. And to tell us more about it, here is Carol.
Good morning, and thank you, Francis. Quite often, we talk here on the show about animals and their plight and what we as humans are doing and how we have attempted to humanize them and turn animals, wild animals, into humans, become our little brothers or little sisters or husbands or whatever. And so there are people out there in organizations such as the International Primate Protection League that do very good work, and Miss McGrill, Shirley, I've known her for some while, and a very respectable group. It does international work on behalf of many of the primates, monkeys, apes, lemurs, or what have you, but I've invited her in to talk with us and give us some... And good morning, Shirley. How are you?
Hello, Carol. How are you today?
Oh, I'm fine and quite excited that I get to talk to you, and hope that you share some of your good stories and help educate us on the issues and plight of the monkeys or the primates that are around the world. So, again, thank you for joining me. And can you tell me about your organization, first of all, IPPL?
Well, the International Primate Protection League is a group that I founded way back in 1973, so it's probably older than half of your listeners. And I founded it because I saw the abuse that monkeys and apes were had inflicted on them when I was living in Thailand. And they would take the apes around the beaches as photo touts, and when I picked up my air freight from the previous posting to New Delhi, I saw lots of crates of little monkeys, snow white babies, but I learned later on they were stumpy on macaques. They were on the way to New York to a research animal dealer. And so I thought, what are they doing? And I imagine that these little monkeys were begging me to help them. Mm-hmm. And so since 1973, I have been working to try to make the world safer for monkeys and apes. And the ape scene is rather crowded. The monkey scene is not. The amount of money and attention seems to go to the larger primates that fascinate people, but the pain, suffering, and misery is inflicted on the plainer primates, the macaque monkeys, the baboons, and then there's a lot of cruelty in China to the leaf monkeys and other monkeys that get eaten, and parts of the body are considered to have medical value. So the primates are in trouble worldwide.
Mm-hmm. And there's a very large list. I know back at least to 2007, there were quite a few of them that were endangered. And can you share with us some of the regions that these and some of the species that that are endangered, like the Henan one and Gibbon in China?
Many of the most endangered primates people may never have heard of. For example, there's a leaf monkey that's down to about 100. The Delacour's leaf monkeys are so beautiful. They're black with little white short legs on the legs. They look really amazing. And their babies are born bright orange. They're down to about 700. And then on Hainan in China, Hainan Island, the gibbons are less than 50 now. And there's no the greater ape species that's quite as rare as that. And a lot of lemurs are endangered because the habitat's being destroyed. There's an awful lot of trade. And in general, we humans are not good at learning to share the world with our fellow primates. It seems we'd rather share it with cockroaches and creatures, mosquitoes, whatever we're going to be sharing it with when the primates have gone.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I've come to learn about primates is that quite a large number are actually used in research and in laboratories for medicine and what have you, space research and automobile research and all. So what goes on in that scene?
Well, the research scene is really bad because the United States is by far the biggest user, although Japan and the European Union use about 10,000 a year each, but we imported 27,000 last year, and two-thirds of these monkeys came from China. And they belong to a species called the long-tailed macaque, or crab-eating macaque, that is not found in China. China has spotted a great way to make money, so they're like a vacuum cleaner, bringing in the monkeys from Cambodia and from Laos and the neighboring countries, and Vietnam too, and they're sending them out, and they have fake papers saying that they were born in captivity. And you kind of know it's not true, and we have all kinds of moles and tipsters, and we're telling the Fish and Wildlife law enforcement people all the time, this is something you should be looking into, because even though it's not now an endangered species, it is a crime to make a false declaration on a federal document. Mm-hmm. And you can really get into trouble if you say an animal is captive born when in fact is well caught. And some years ago, the Division of Law Enforcement, the Fish and Wildlife Service did in fact prosecute a case in Chicago for the importers, a company called Labs, that imported all these monkeys. They brought in unweaned infants, which was considered a misdemeanor, although the monkeys were 3 to 5 weeks old, just babies. But they brought in a lot of older monkeys who could not be captive born because the facility that exported them didn't exist. And the prosecutor was a famous, later famous, Patrick Fitzgerald, at the time, and he assigned a very good prosecutor to that case, and it didn't go exactly the way he liked it. Those wildlife cases never do, and the company paid a $500,000 fine, but we were really pleased to see it prosecuted at all, because if a judge has got a rape case, then a wildlife crime case, and then a murder case coming up, they're not going to put the same value normally on the wildlife case, but you get a few outstanding judges who think the law is the law and laws to protect wildlife are meant to protect wildlife, and they will go ahead with these cases.
Mm-hmm. Now, your organization, and especially you've been quite instrumental in affording information, obtaining information, and participating in investigations. Are you still actively doing that kind of work with IPPL?
Yes, very much so. And we've done quite a few cases that have got people into prison. We did a case called the Bangkok Six, and the six were baby orangutans, of whom four died within the first 6 months in their captivity situation. And they were stuffed at Singapore and put taken to the airport in crates labeled birds. And they double layered the wood so the air couldn't go directly in. You couldn't see what was in.
Mm-hmm.
But then there was a mishap at Bangkok. They were supposed to be put on a plane to Belgrade, and they missed their connection. And then the birds started crying like human babies, and the Thais thought they were human babies and put them through the x-ray, and there they saw the outlines of six baby orangutans, and they did confiscate them, and in the end they went back to Indonesia. But that was called the Bangkok Six case, and my organization set about finding out who did it.
Mm.
And we found there was a network of criminals in many countries, and one was a German called Kurt Schaefer.
Mm-hmm.
And the German wildlife officials did not provide the documentation they got right to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. They said they didn't trust them because the U.S. dealer who was involved was in Miami. And so they'd said they'd reported him before and no results. So we put a lot of pressure on Fish and Wildlife, and the German smuggler actually gave us information as it was coming in about meetings with the DOF, efforts to suppress the truth. It was much easier to investigate at that time because it was in the early 90s, but, you know, people were still using faxes, and the smugglers were faxing instructions to each other. And it's hard to believe there were times when people were really not using email and then pressing the delete button to organize their foul deals. And one Miami smuggler did end up in prison for over a year. The prosecutor gave him a probation plea bargain, and we got heard about it and got 1,000+ letters to the judge from Jane Goodall, Prince Edward, and all kinds of people. And the judge rejected the plea bargain, which is unusual because judges can often be lazy. They like to clear the calendars.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a wonderful judge called James Kehoe, and he just said, you come back when you've got a felony. And so this man pled guilty to felony conspiracy. So he named a lot of other conspirators, and he was put away in prison in near me, and I'm in South Carolina, in Jessup, Georgia, at the federal slammer. And so we were very pleased with that result. We've also done a big gorilla smuggling case involving Malaysia. But there's always some smuggling going on. And there's the usual methods. Birds are smuggled in PVC pipe, in suitcases, and people put animals in their pants pockets. And, and sometimes they get loose on planes. There's all kinds of strange ways to smuggle.
Mm-hmm.
And it just goes on and on and on, because the value of the wildlife is high and the penalties are so low.
Mm-hmm.
If these same people were smuggling drugs, not baby orangutans, they would not be in prison for 13 months.
Right.
They'd be in for 13
now,
years, 30 years, who knows?
Now, speaking of the orangutan, what is their situation now? How are they doing in the wild? What's their population like? Are they in greater danger now, or threatened, or what is the status?
It's getting worse day to day for the orangutans and all the other primates of Indonesia, because Indonesia, of course, also has gibbons. They have monkeys. They have some amazing monkeys, the long-nosed proboscis monkeys, who do not survive in captivity. And the orangutans, there are some rehab centers, but they get so many animals, they really don't have anywhere to put them. For example, there's one in Borneo that has about 800 orangutans, and the people who run it are so nice. And, but, you know, for every orangutan that enters these rehab centers, they'll be mothers shot to death, because that's the only way you can bring them into captivity. The orangutan fathers do not stay with the families. They just have the family, mother, and baby, or babies. And if you think of it like, to bring them, if, for example, you brought a little baby girl, orangutan, into a rehab center, a mother's been shot. Who knows, if it was the mother's first baby, then you've also lost the 9 babies she will never give birth to, as well as this mother. And if it's a baby girl orangutan, you've lost all the babies that this one would have produced in the wild. So they're trying to rehabilitate them, but the forest is going down, and it's going down a lot for palm oil plantations. And so it's very hard to avoid palm oil. You can look at food things, but it goes into lots of other soaps and different products. So if you have anything that does get labeled, just take a look. It doesn't take long. And if it's palm oil, put it back on the shelf, because you can get plenty of soaps and products like that without the palm oil, and foodstuffs too.
Yeah, and a lot of people are not aware. Some of them are green in conscience that we don't want to use soap with animal product in it. But palm oil, when it's present, in, it presents a problem in that they're having to clear those forests and in turn going to plantations. And I understand there's an estimate that, a prediction that the orangutan will be extinct in the wild within the next 10, 20 years.
I think it's likely, particularly on the island of Sumatra. Orangutans are found on only 2 islands. One, Sumatra, belonging to Indonesia. The other is Borneo, which partly is Indonesian and part is called Island Malaysia. And then there's a little nation of Brunei. But the orangutans in Borneo are more widely scattered. But Borneo, like other areas, has been afflicted by these forest fires. And, you know, they didn't use to have forest fires and rainforests. And it's the way we're fiddling around with the climate that's causing a lot of these problems.
And the meat trade you mentioned, we know that the illegal trafficking presents a problem because there's a high dollar value. But there's a meat trade
meat trade that's local. Now, when the meat was just caught by people like pygmies or other people living primitive natural lives, the Penangs in Malaysia, it didn't affect the species. They lived in peace with the other species. But now they get the forestry, they drive the roads in, and the hunters and poachers can use the roads, just as the logging trucks can. A few responsible companies are starting to break up their roads when they bring the logs out, but that's not the usual. And then some of the logging camps actually hire local hunters to go out and provide meat, and so all the monkeys are grossly affected by this bushmeat trade, as are large wild cats and anything they can eat. Porcupines, you wouldn't believe what goes on a plate. And China, of course, is terrible, because a lot of the places in China do like to get their meat fresh, and so I do see live monkeys run meat markets, and we've videographed them in Vietnam, and they just marked the photographers. Our photographer saw a man buying a stump-tail macaque, walking away with it, and he's saying, "Oh, it's delicious, delicious, delicious," in English, just because they knew he was upset. But there's a huge bushmeat trade wherever primates live, also in South America. So how we can stop all this, I don't know. There are some problems with diseases, and serious ones like Ebola in Africa. There was one outbreak called Mayaboot in Gabon, Africa, that was brought about through eating a raw, freshly slaughtered chimpanzee. They just didn't cook it properly, and their whole, I don't know how many people were wiped out in that one, but lots of those epidemics, because there isn't a disease that can't go from human to animal, or specifically primates, or vice versa. And you get problems too in the orangutan rehab centers, because a lot of the animals who enter have had human contact, Mm-hmm. And one center on the island of Saba had a very old orangutan. This was some years ago now. And they had two little young orangutans alongside, and the young orangutans were on rehab. And then the big male had tested negative for TB, but you can get a false negative when the TB's at a very advanced stage. So inadvertently, animals with TB could be released, or animals with many other diseases. So this rehabilitation and release is no substitute for keeping the animals untouched in the wild.
Mm-hmm. Well, the apes, monkeys, and what have you, the trait and what we're, the pressure that we're putting on the population. One of the other things, we know bush meat or meat trade, and we know that research is required, but what about the pet trade? What do you recommend, or what are some of the points you would offer to discourage the ownership?
Well, the pet trade is all over, and they are, monkeys are kept as pets in the States. You could even buy them on the internet. And yesterday we had a letter from a lady who owned a Japanese macaque who is now 3 years old. She bought the animal at 3 months, and the animal was starting to rip her to shreds. And so we tried to find sanctuary homes for them.
Mm-hmm.
When these people don't learn, it's unbelievable. And so there's a big pet trade in the States. As you know, there was a big trade in chimps, although that's not as big. But you just recently had a case, excuse me, a little coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a chimp escaped in a pet in Connecticut and just tore a lady who was not even the owner apart. And she's now in Cleveland Clinic, has been there for months, and has gone off the front pages.
Mm-hmm.
And, but it's still allowed in Connecticut. They didn't, the law to ban it didn't go through.
And do you think that laws should be stricter now, not just that, but to protect the animals themselves? And
yes, I do. I do, because, the sanctuaries are all full. Because this lady, for example, with a little snow monkey pet, has lived 3 years with her. Wherever the animal goes, the animal may live another 30, because they are long-lived animals. And the owners disappear with a smile on the faces, patting themselves on the back for getting the animal introduced to a group, but they don't become contributors to the survival.
I see. And once they get relinquished the ownership or what have you, they walk away, huh?
That's right, they walk away. I visited one sanctuary once, and an owner delivered a pigtail macaque, who's a very wild, rather terrifying male, and they went away, and the kids in the car were saying, "The monkey's gone, the monkey's gone." It's unbelievable, and they're not going to follow up. They dumped the monkey. And it happens a lot. And in Thailand, they have a really horrible trade in little baby gibbons, particularly, and they shoot the mothers in the trees. And gibbons, in case your listeners don't know, are apes that live very high, 50 to 100 feet in the trees, and they move very fast. They have extremely long arms. They almost touch the ground. I mean, I would love to have them arms like that, and I won't need to bend down to pick up anything. They're just amazing. But, to shoot them, you've got to be really careful, because you don't want to shoot the baby.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to shoot and injure the mother. They want the mother to drop to the ground alive, with the baby alive and still clinging to her. And then they shoot the mother. Oh, the monkey mother can drop down dead, mm-hmm. and the baby alive, whatever its situation. And then they remove the baby. Most of the babies die, and then they put them into this trade, so into dealers. And they do the beaches and bars in these places like Pattaya. And I'm sure Hawaiian people who go there don't get their picture taken with baby gibbons, but they seem particularly, a lot of European tourists seem to like it,
mm-hmm.
and the baby gibbon will cling to a human, and these humans think the baby gibbon's having a lovely time, but the baby gibbon clings round the clock to the mothers in the wild. And there's that picture on somebody's mantelpiece when they get home as a souvenir of their trip should have a trail of blood over it, because it is the blood of the dead mother and all the other mothers and babies who've died. We reckon you have to kill about 20 given mothers to get one surviving baby, and I believe it when I see them around. I mean, yeah, I've had a gibbon loose in my living room, and I do have a sanctuary for gibbons, but they don't come in the living room. Oh, you know, you never catch it, period. They're just very hard to catch.
Well, we're going to take a break. This is the Carol Cox Show here at KWAI. If you'd like to call in, 524-1080. My guest is Ms. Shirley McGreal, with the chairwoman of the International Primate Protection League. Shirley, we'll be right back, all right?
Okay, Carol.
This is Bill Holloman with the Tuskegee Airmen Scholarship Fund. We send young people, deserving young people, to college. Please contact me, 206-963-5663 or 253-852-7237 at the address 9240 South 240th Place, Kent, Washington, 98030. Your donations are appreciated, helping send young kids to school. Thank you.
Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Jefferson. The book, Red Tail Captured, Red Tail Free. Memoirs of a Tuskegee Airman, prisoner of war in Germany for 9 months. $32. Contact me, 18126 Brinker Street, Detroit, Michigan, 48234. Or call me, 313-368-0674. Thank you.
Okay, welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. Again, my guest is Shirley McGreal, the International Primate Protection League. And again, you can pick all of this up at carolcox.com or email us, carol@carolcox.com. I hear you have some vocalization going on in the back.
The
what
vocalization is,
that?
She's a doctor called Zoe. She's a Great Pyrenees. I do Great Pyrenees Rescue for the southeast of the United States. And this one I pulled from the SPCA the morning she was going to be killed. And unfortunately now she's had a cancer surgery. That's why she's staying inside. She's leaving the room, thank goodness.
Oh, that's okay. We invite everybody to listen in and chime in. But anyway, you know, Shirley, about your organization, I'm a firm believer in what you do. And as I say, I've dealt with you and have had nothing but great respect for what it is you do. Even as a special agent, I've had interactions with you, and you've done great work. And even what you're doing now, the rescue, can you tell, you have an adoption program for gibbons there at your facility. Could you tell us about that and how people can get involved in the adoption
program? Yes, we have 32 gibbons who live with us. And many came from research labs, and a lot of them are very old. I think we have two of the who are probably some of the oldest in the world, because they're both 50. And gibbons are very beautiful animals. Most of ours are white-handed gibbons, and they have lovely white hands and white feet and white rings around their faces. And their body color is either beige or black. And our website, www.ippl.org, has an introduction and background and pictures of every single one of our gibbons. And they're really lovely animals. We feed them as best we can. We'd love to have them back in nature, but gibbons are monogamous, pair bonded, so it's not really feasible, and the forest is disappearing. So we try to set them up as close to nature as we can. And when we feel sad that they're not in nature, we think of the way it places they came from. One gibbon came from a 4x4x4 foot cage with no perches, nothing to sit on. I drove up to pick her up, so I saw her. Another one of our veterans, Igor, self-mutilated whenever he saw another gibbon. He was very stressed. And he was in research for a long time. And to stop him doing this self-mutilation, tearing his arms up, they covered his cage with black plexiglass. So he'd been for years and years behind black plexiglass, nothing to do, nothing to see. And we were so happy to bring him down here. And he lives in a large area away from other gibbons. But he loves bird watching. And it's really funny because our very rare painted buntings, beautiful birds, green, red, purple coloration, they always choose to nest at the feeder we put up near Igor's living area. We have put a TV in for him. And he likes watching a lot of programs. He likes watching Sesame Street. And we know that he's watching because if I go into his indoor house where the TV is located and stand between him and the TV, he'll swing away by arm swinging, which is why how gibbons move, and so take another perch. If they go and block his view again, he'll swing somewhere else. And so we know he's actually paying attention to the colors. Whether we don't know how much he's following, but I think it's enrichment. And we grow a lot of bamboo, and we give all the gibbons bamboo, which they love to play. And it is such a beautiful, useful plant. I'm sure it grows well in Hawaii. It's now a popular flooring material, which I think is excellent because it replaces, it replenishes itself and grows very, very fast. Mm-hmm. So it's not like chopping down tea trees to make floors. And so teak mahogany furniture is now a badge of shame. Bamboo furniture is a badge of honor. And it makes a very nice wood.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've ever had that in Hawaii at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the your adoption program, again, people can actually adopt an animal, and this money benefits the feeding program and the caring, correct?
That's right, yes. We have four gibbons currently under the adoption program. The old Igor I tell you about, Courtney, who was a young infant we cared for when her leg was really badly torn up. And then we have a Rimrang Si, who was a first lab gibbon. He came here in 1981. And a tongue, a gibbon we've had since 1974, and she was a Vietnamese species of gibbon. So we have a very interesting set of animals. We only have one of the Vietnamese species of gibbon. All the rest are white-handed, and they're all different. You know, they all look alike the first time you see them,
mm-hmm.
but when you get to know them, they're all so different. And which, because their units are 50 foot long with long runways, we know if they come up and want to get the back scratched, it's an act of choice for them. They don't ever have to come close. But a lot of them like to come up, and
mm-hmm.
I got one Gus, who I call the dentist, because he comes and looks in their mouth, checks their teeth out, and they have little idiosyncratic ways, and people can adopt them. And if they adopt a gibbon, they go onto our website, www.ippl.org, or just contact Span Mail, and then they pick a gibbon as a four, and that gibbon, we send them updates, introductory packs for the people who adopt them at the full adoption level. We send them a beautiful gibbon t-shirt. We have forest green t-shirts with three of our gibbons, Beanie, a blind one with epilepsy, was a really pathetic rescue story, and he died. And then we have Igor also, and a Rinrang Si, and they're all on a t-shirt, and they were beautiful drawings done by a fine artist. You know, lovely t-shirt with a bamboo framing.
Well, you know, I think I have a caller here, and I met her the other day just by coincidence. I was at the Honolulu Zoo looking at Rusty, our orangutan, Rusty and Violet, which you're aware of his, Rusty's history and all. And her name is Monica, and she wants to say something to you. Monica, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine. I wanted to say hi to you, Carol, and hello to Shirley as well, and thank you for all the work that you do.
Hi, Monica.
I don't know that this is a relevant time to talk about it, since you're talking about the gibbons at your rescue center, but when I had met Carol this weekend, I'm an instructor for the Zoo Society, and I had had a group of children, and we were touring the animals and talking about various conservation issues, and what I was talking about with the children at Rusty's enclosure was the palm oil industry and how it affects orangutans, and how a number of conservationists believe that within 10 to 15 years will have lost orangutans because of massive deforestation of their rainforest home for palm oil production. And I just wanted to share on this capacity and in this venue with Carol's listeners that palm oil is something that comes out of Indonesia. About 90% of the world's palm oil supply comes out of Malaysia, Indonesia. Something that's found in everything from cakes and cookies and cream cheese spreads to shampoos and soaps. And as an instructor for the Zoo Society, every time I take people on a tour, I always mention to them, you know, we live in a consumer nation, and the greatest impact we make is the way that we spend our money. And so whenever people ask, what is something I can do to help stop the potential extinction of some of these animals, I tell them, as a consumer, the greatest thing you can do is be aware of what you're buying, where it comes from, and how often you use it. So with palm oil, because, you know, extinction is kind of imminent for some species in Indonesia because of all this rainforest that's being cleared for the production of this oil. So we ask people to curtail their shopping habits, or at the very least, when you're out shopping, if you could read the labels of the things that you buy, and if it has palm oil in it, don't purchase it. You can Google the derivative names for palm oil. It also goes by vitamin A palmitate, retinol palmitate. And while I know there is an organization that certifies sustainable palm oil, it's still, in the development stages, and certification processes are sometimes... there's loopholes So, anyway, I just wanted to share that, and I thought this would be a perfect platform, and I'm so grateful that I ran into Carol that we could
have
this.
Monica, how long have you been at Honolulu Zoo?
I have been there off and on since 2004. I
didn't know Jade. We have a gibbon from Honolulu Zoo who was sent from Honolulu to Maui, Jade. And she was sent from Honolulu to Maui Zoo, and came here along with her mate, whose name was, when he came, his name was Boy. He had been a pet of an aviator who came from Maui called Sam Pryor. He'd retired there. He was a Pan American pilot, and the only gibbon graves in the United States are six little gibbons buried along with Charles Lindbergh, the aviator, in a small churchyard near Hannah. And also, Sam Pryor himself was buried there. And when he died, he didn't leave proper instructions for his animals, because, in fact, he'd called and absolutely had said we'd take his babies. And so, but when he died, they were just scattered around, and three went to Maui Zoo. And you have a wonderful USDA inspector, or had, Betsy Ryan. And she was really concerned that Maui Zoo was not keeping the gibbons right. And she just first them to clean up. In the end, all three came here, and with Mary Chumboy, who works for American Airlines, was also involved with the zoo, and they all came on an American Airlines flight, and Mary works for the airlines, and so we received this gibbon called Boy, and their son Maui, Boy, and Jade, the mother from Honolulu Zoo. But I'm from South Carolina, and I couldn't say to a gibbon, come here, Boy. So racist. So we called a Hawaiian member who suggested the name Palu Palu, which then it means something like softly, softly, gently, gently. And so we have Palu Palu, ex-boy, and Jade, and Maui. So they're our wonderful Hawaiian family. So we do have roots, and Lucy Worms are from Pacific Climate Sanctuary. In fact, was very active with Mary and securing the release of these gibbons and getting them over here.
Yeah, you know, Lucy does good work over here, too, there on Maui. And she has marmosets or had. I haven't spoken to her.
Yes, she has marmosets, yes, that's right.
But, you know, Monica and Shirley, what would you offer the listeners out there? You like them to go away with knowing about primates and their plight today. If you could, both of you touch on that. Maybe there are people just take things for granted and not know.
Well, I think go to IGPL's website, www.igpl.org, and this isn't self-promotion. Look at the links, because, you know, a lot of money gets thrown at mountain gorillas, chimpanzees, and, in fact, orangutans. Some of those charities do have a lot of money. They need it. They have a lot. But there's little places like Circapan, a monkey sanctuary in Nigeria, and Care, a baboon sanctuary in South Africa. And there's so many sanctuaries with a drill ranch, and that is in Nigeria. And they all need help, but nobody's heard of the species, usually. And nobody knows of their work. So track these links, and you'll have an absolutely wonderful day if you just go a site walk starting at IPPL's website. We are very generous with our web links. We choose really good groups and direct people to them.
Monica?
I have to say, I come from a background of working more with the great ape species, specifically with chimpanzees, and I understand that they sort of, at times, in conservation can be a bit of show stealers, because they are very charismatic species, but I have to go back to what I said originally, and that's, as you know, a lot of times people in our society, it obviously cannot make it to, physically make it to other countries to work with some of these animals, but myself having been fortunate enough to work with a nonprofit in Cameroon with chimpanzee rehabilitation and rescue, I have to say the biggest thing that we have to be aware of is as consumers the what we're buying, because all of our resources come from somewhere else, and it is non-human and human primate species that end up sort of paying various prices for what we take for granted in our society. And with my personal experience, I would say that, for instance, with chimpanzee populations, what's ravaging them is, you know, the bushmeat trade. But it's the thing, if you talk to someone in our country, for instance, about the bushmeat trade, they say, well, I don't eat bushmeat, I don't eat African ape meat, and so I'm not impacting that population. And while that's true, what is impacting them that goes along with bushmeat is rampant logging. And as the forest is opened up and more trees are cut down, that's what allows bushmeat hunters to navigate previously, you know, overgrown forests. So everything is connected. And a lot of times it comes back to the way that we spend our money. So I would just urge people to be minimal consumers and look at things and really question whether or not you need them, because everything that we purchase has an effect somewhere else in the world, and it's our responsibility to be aware of that, I think.
Well, Monica, I hope you'll stay in touch with IPPL, because we actually are a primary funder of Limby Wildlife Center, and we also, I've been to Sherry Speed.
Sherry Speed is who I work with.
Africa Sanctuary, which is wonderful. I love Sherry. And so it seems like we have some links in common.
Wonderful. Great. Yeah. I will keep in touch. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Monica. I appreciate
thank
it.
You very
and,
much.
And keep doing the good work. I was moved by the questions the children were asking.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah, they're moved sometimes. They want to, like, the way they had to ask you, can we write letters? Can we talk about this? We need to do something to stop this. And it's a beautiful thing to see them become inspired.
Right, and that's what I'm going to pass on to my listeners out there. How old were these kids? 8, 9, 10 years old?
Roughly, I would say that's the median age. It's a program designed for children between the ages of 6 and 11.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say the median age is about 8 or 9.
And the bulk of the questions they had for me were, can't you do something? Can we start a campaign? Can we write letters? Can we get our congressman? I'm thinking, if the 11-year-olders are asking that, what are the old rusty buckets doing? We're buying the wood, the palm oil. So the listeners out there, if the children are begging for answers and actions, maybe we can take actions by...
Do you have a couple of minutes left so I can tell you about our wonderful achievement?
Yes.
On 15th May this year, we had a Sherpa. His name is Jamchang Bota, and he's a climate guide on Mount Everest. And we asked him to take Save the Monkeys banner to the top of Mount Everest. And the Tibetans are Buddhists, Lama is Buddhist, and of course the Sherpa was very happy to help. And he climbs without oxygen. So he climbed to the top of Mount Everest and hoisted this beautiful banner, Save the Monkeys, and we've got it on our website. So he had this message like from the top of the world, and we were really very excited that he did this for us. And the picture of Jamchang and his wonderful banner is on our website.
No.
And it's just wonderful that a country like Nepal whose monkeys are in fact threatened by two U.S. labs who are involved in some rather questionable dealings there. Well, it's just great that the Nepal is getting opposition and protests, and we're so proud of him.
Can you give a little more detail on the, there's 300 monkeys being proposed to ship from Nepal?
Yes, though we don't know if they will be or not, because Nepal has a new prime minister, and governments change, and the royal family was slaughtered, a lot of them, and they changed, but these were 300 in Delhi, and there was talk that a U.S. lab was wanting to bring them to its facility in Texas. But right now, Jane Goodall has been actually twice to Nepal and worked on this with one, but we can't take credit away from the Nepali groups, Wildlife Watch Nepal, Animals Nepal, Roots and Shoots Nepal, and they are suing the government to stop it and protesting. So it's wonderful, like Monica was mentioning, you know, good have Roots and Shoots is rather like, is kids and young people. You are really working at the grassroots to stop these evil things going on, mm-hmm. because you can't expect the vested interests.
So if people want to write a letter and assist and voice their opinion on the potential import, they can write to whom, or go to your website at
www. Because Nepal has just got a new prime minister,
mm-hmm.
so the best. It's easy to actually send a letter just to the Prime Minister's office.
Mm-hmm.
Kathmandu, Nepal, because that will get there, the Prime Minister office of the Prime Minister.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've just written him a letter, and
okay. We
got it out in the mail. And writing letters is beyond important. You know, a lot of people would prefer not to send emails.
Mm-hmm.
And often it's considered spam, and people pay to download it overseas, and they really don't appreciate emails as much as handwritten or typed letters. The Prime Minister of Nepal is Deepak Bohara, DeepakBohara.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not the Prime Minister. He's the Ministry of Forestry, so that's the right person to go to, and it's Kathmandu, Nepal.
Well, I'll try and post.
Kathmandu, Nepal.
All righty. I'll try and put some of that up on the website. But again.
Okay, I'll send you that.
Yes, please. And again, that's at carolcox.com. But one of the biggest problems that we have here is that we have research labs, and these 300 monkeys potentially will end up in the research labs. And so, again. I looked at Ayakuk. We're getting down to a few minutes here, Shirley. But I looked at Ayakuk, and it's kind of funny or ironic that they tell the person in the laboratory that you have to make sure the animals are clean water and fed and housed properly in ample space. But then they're destined to be burned, tested with chemicals, and all of that poked and probed. Does that make sense?
Yes, and I was at a conference early last year, and we saw people who were discussing their use in biowarfare research,
mm-hmm.
and these Ebola, anthrax, and then these chemical warfare agents like ricin and sarin, and the gruesome military labs are not even open to inspection by the USDA, and they're killing enormous numbers of monkeys. And this is being facilitated by the availability of monkeys, because the labs prefer to use them because they're so high up in the phylogenetic tree, so close to us. But we always argue, because they're so close to us, you shouldn't use them. You should protect them. And one of my favorite quotes, I stand on its head a little bit, is John Kennedy's, "Ask not what primates can do for the human race. Ask what the human race can do for our fellow primates."
And right.
I think that's the way we need to start looking at it, because they are all going extinct. We, the human race, are not. We are multiplying at an obscene rate.
Mm-hmm. Well, Shirley, thank you. We're coming down to the close, and I really appreciate it, and we'll have to talk again. get
okay,
together.
Okay, it was lovely talking to you, Carol, and it was nice to talk to an old friend, and if I ever get to Hawaii, Monica and I are going to have a latte.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Monica, thank you, and we'll contact one another. I'd like to get you on, and we'll talk about what's going on, the good work over there with the Zoo Society and what have you. So thank
absolutely.
The two of you. And Shirley, thank you.
Bye-bye, aloha.
Aloha. Well, what we have here is a little bit of insight on what's happening to primates, and it's enough to trouble me. And you know that there's 394 primate species in the world, and then some are very rare, and some of them, as of 2007, was 17 of that individual. Now, this is Hanan, they're about 30 now. But again, it really, we need to do things, and think about when you buy teak, when you buy mahogany, think about those things, and think about the conditions in the research labs and what have you. So, again, thank you for joining me, and this is the Carol Cox Show, and I'll see you next week.
Back when I had a little, I thought that I needed a lot. A little was overrated, but a lot was a little too complicated. See, zero didn't satisfy me. A million didn't make me happy. That's when I learned the lesson that it's all about your perceptions. Hey, are you a papa or a superstar? So you act, so you feel, so you are. It ain't about the size of your car, it's about the size of the faith in your heart. There's hope, it doesn't cost a thing to smile. You don't have to pay to laugh, you better thank God for that. Hope. It doesn't cost a thing to smile. You don't have to pay to laugh. You better thank God for that. There's hope.
Off in the back country of Brazil, I met a young brother that made me feel that I could accomplish anything. You see, just like me, he wanted to sing. He had no windows and no doors. He lived a simple life and was extremely poor. On top of all of that, he had no eyesight. But that didn't keep him from seeing the light. He said, us alike in the USA. And all I did was complain. He said, living here is paradise. He taught me paradise is in your mind. You know that there's hope. It doesn't cost a thing to smile. You don't have to pay to laugh. You better thank God for that. There's hope. It doesn't cost a thing to smile. You don't have to pay to laugh. You better thank God for that.
KWAI, Honolulu 1080 on the AM dial.